I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Well, I am guessing because it's still the first week of January, I can officially, and still in good taste, say Happy New Year. Welcome. I am Lynn Hayes Freeland, and this is the first edition of Minority Health Matters for 2023. It's the good news that we are continuing the show. We still have a lot to talk about. That's kind of the bad news. We still have a lot to talk about. When we talk about health disparities in the Black community in particular, seems like we should be making progress. Are we, however? I'm not sure, but one of my two guests will be able to answer for me today. Please welcome back to our conversation, Derek Turner with the Journey to Medicine Program, Dr. William Simmons, Gateway Medical Society. Both of them, their resumes are way too long, but they've been on the show several times, so I'm going to skip the formalities. Happy New Year, gentlemen.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Lynn.
All right. I'm going to ask you a loaded question right out the gate, and Dr. Simmons, I want to start with you, because this is the time of year, and certainly everyone's been watching, well, to some extent, politics. Soon we will be having the State of the Union address. What is the State of the Union? When we look at health and the Black community, what is the state of our health?
Wow. We have, I don't think it has, it definitely has not improved. We have so many different things, especially with the onset of COVID and other things. We have had a major setback in health acquisition. During the time of COVID, many Black people who live in the inner city particularly did not have the connectivity to go online and talk to their doctors, so they just didn't go and talk to doctors. They had so there were long periods of time between any doctor discussion, any visits, their evaluation of their diabetes, their heart disease, and so forth. And so many people actually had medical setbacks definitely because of the lack of access during those times. And that has not significantly improved. Now that people are able to go and see their doctors face to face, it's very hard to get an appointment. And so, again, that's another reason why people are just not getting the kind of medical care and access. And that continues on in 2023.
In 2023, a couple of follow-up questions. When you say health acquisition, do you mean our access to health? Is that what we're talking about when you say health acquisition?
Kind of putting it in a kind of a general term. Yes, it's, it's access to health, access to medications from pharmacies. They're having people get the help that they need, sometimes medically, to follow up and buy the medications that they need. It's all inclusive. Not just seeing the doctor, but getting the medications that they need can also be a challenge for some people.
And Derek, I know you wear a couple of hats in these conversations, which is one of the things I always appreciate about you. So have you found, in particular with our young people, the kids involved in the Journey to Medicine program, have you found that they too feel somewhat disconnected from medical services or not so much?
not so much from their perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Really, when I think when you're dealing with health matters where children are concerned, education is huge. Well, really with children and adults. But kind of piggybacking on what Dr. Simmons was talking about, there's an expense that comes with health care that in our communities can be a challenge to be met when you're talking about the difference between or the decision between do I buy groceries or do I buy this medication? Do I pay rent or do I pay for this prescription that could be, you know, a little bit pricey? So
right.
I really believe that that factors into a lot of our decision making when it comes to pursuing health care.
And then along those lines, I mean, I have heard literally people say to me, well, this medicine was pretty expensive, so I've been cutting the pills in half and only taking half instead of the full pill that was prescribed to me. And I know that that becomes a financial decision for a lot of people, but there's all that's also a medical decision, is it not?
Absolutely, because the research that have been done to create the dosage that are appropriate for the weight size of the patients that they're using is exact for the most part. And if you start cutting it in half, you may not be getting a therapeutic level of the medications that you need. And so it may not be doing the benefit and you're not getting the full benefit of the medicines or getting any benefit at all.
And so I kind of feel like I want you to repeat that because people feel like, and I have had this conversation with several people in the last couple of months, they feel like as long as they're still getting some of the medicine, they're going to be okay. But what I'm hearing you say is that may not be the case, and one should not count on that.
You definitely not count on that. First of all, not all medicines are scored. And when I say scored, I mean equal amount of the medicine is throughout the tablet. There are some medicines that are just kind of that are in the tablet, but they might be all in the center, or it might be all on the edge, or it might be all on the other edge. And so when you cut it down the middle, you may not be getting an equal amount of the medications that you are being subscribed. So if you get a tablet that is not scored and you try to cut it in half, you don't know how much you're getting.
You don't know how much you're getting. Okay, that's probably something we're going to have to circle back around to because I do think it's more common than people realize. Although I did hear on the news this morning that we're starting to see a change in inflation. I don't know if that's going to have a direct impact on the grocery store or not. Anyway, you are listening to Minority Health Matters. I am Lynn Hayes Freeland. My guest today, Dr. William Simmons, Derek Turner. I'm guessing that no one has met with the students involved in the Journey to Medicine program since Monday, since all eyes were on the NFL game on Monday. But that's what I want to talk about next. I want to talk about, first of all, I want to get my guests to react to what they saw, assuming they were both watching the game. Even if you weren't, you've seen the replays. And then I want to talk about the role of healthcare professionals in Mr. Hamlin's progress, and his progress has been significant. I'm going to take a break a little bit early because I don't want to start this conversation and then have to stop it for a commercial break. So we'll take a break. You're listening to Minority Health Matters. I am Lynn Hayes Freeland. It's the first Saturday of the new year. I'm glad to have you with me. Hey, it's 2023. It's the first Saturday of the new year. I am Lynn Hayes Freeland, and this is Minority Health Matters. Now, hopefully you already know this, but in case you don't, Minority Health Matters is a show that we do on the first Saturday of every month in cooperation with the Gateway Medical Society and their Journey to Medicine program. And our goal, our focus is very simple, to look at healthcare issues as they relate specifically to the Black community and the challenge of getting more minority males in particular in the medical pipeline. My guest today, two representatives of those organizations, Derek Turner, Dr. William Simmons. And Derek, I'm going to start with you. Now, I've already given you a warning what I wanted to talk to you about. Were you watching the game Monday night? Did you see what happened with Mr. Hamlin in replays? And what went through your head and your heart as you watched it?
I was watching the game, Lynn, on Monday night as pretty much any, I mean, that's as American an activity as watching Monday Night Football, you know, as you can get. Watching that play, and it was definitely eye-opening. It was downright scary. For me personally, it gave me a little bit of perspective into what happened to my late father when he suddenly went into cardiac arrest and collapsed on a tennis court. And so it was a little bit personal for me to watch it happen to such a young man. And for that to have happened on such a routine football play, I mean, it was definitely the unthinkable where, you know, you have this young man who's 24 years old, a graduate of my alma mater, Central Catholic High School. But watching the seriousness unfold really has been eye-opening on a number of levels, to even watch afterwards where sports, you know, announcers and commentators on ESPN and other national networks are actually praying on live TV. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, think it's really kind of, there's been a shift in the culture of sports, so to speak, you know, for this, you know, to have garnered so much worldwide attention. And, you know, thankfully, you know, he's doing all right and making a recovery. And, you know, all the news, you know, with regard to his condition has been good news to this point. That's a, you know, that's a blessing. But mm-hmm, it was definitely a scary moment. And I think it was eye-opening for a lot of young people.
In what regard? Because here's why I asked that follow-up question, because by all indications, this isn't a typical football injury, if that makes sense.
Sure. And what young person, particularly in our community, what young person doesn't grow up with a dream of going to the NFL or going to the NBA and making that $1 million paycheck? You know, what young person doesn't have that dream, that aspiration? And to actually see that, whoa, this is something that actually could happen to me at any given point in time, you know, and not just in the NFL, but, you know, for those who play high school sports, for those who play college sports, this really could have happened to anybody. It was such an eye-opening experience, you know, to watch it happen on national TV that way. But I think the reality of the risk that these players, these athletes take every single time they step on the field, I think really, really became real for a lot of young people who watched the NFL.
Okay. All right. And that makes perfect sense. Yeah, because that made it very real. Dr. Simmons, let me ask you, because I know so often as a journalist or a semi-retired journalist, whatever you want to call me, a lot of times I watch news stories, but I watch them from two perspectives. I watch them for the news value, but then I also watch to see how journalists are covering that story. As you saw that footage from Monday night, did you look at that first as just a male, a person watching, and the heartfelt connection to that young man, and then also through the lens of how medical professionals responded?
Well, there were several things that were going on there. First of all, I have seen this young man play. He played a hit as well. And I've seen him take hits much harder than that and just jumped up and had no problem whatsoever. And to see something that I thought looked pretty typical and to have that happen was very, very eye-opening for me. And also, the problem is, and you never know, and from a medical perspective, a lot of young people go out for sports, and they have to get this medical clearance from their family doctor or someone, and usually that's just mostly a rubber stamp. And it showed me the seriousness of actually that evaluation and making it not a rubber stamp, but somebody that actually goes in and evaluates that young person's heart and evaluates that young person to make sure that there isn't any underlying problem that could show up with excessive exercise. And that is because there's an exercise paradox in the sense that exercise is clearly health promoting for a large majority of the population, but for that small number of individuals who harbor cardiac conditions, exercise can sometimes be associated with a risk of sudden death. And so that evaluation that young person get is a serious evaluation. It's not something that, I have this sheet of paper that I have to get signed off so that I can play football. Mm-hmm. That doctor has to truly take that seriously and evaluate that child so that child is not under undue risk.
So when you hear now so much respect, so many accolades for the team medical professionals who responded, what goes through your heart when you hear that?
The fact that they didn't give up. Some people say, oh my gosh, they did CPR for like 9-10 minutes and so forth like that. No, we've done CPR for half an hour, sometimes in the hospital setting. Just the fact that they knew that this was a otherwise healthy young man. They kept going. They did what they had to do, and they did it very professionally. So I was very impressed overall with how the medical team, doctors and trainers handled themselves under a crisis situation.
So, Derek, let me ask you this. And you mentioned how many young people dream of careers in the NFL. How do we use this as a teachable moment in that, yes, a career in the NFL would be awesome, but so would working for the NFL as a doctor, as a trainer, as a coach, you know, something. How do we transfer that message and make it a teachable moment?
You know, we very oftentimes tell young people that the chances of you being struck by lightning are greater than you actually becoming one of the very few who, you know, are blessed to be able to play sports at any professional level, the NFL or otherwise. And so having a plan B is kind of what we always talk to kids about, right? You know, well, if that doesn't work out, what are you going to do? Are you going to go to law school? Are you going to go to medical school? Are you going to, you know, what's your plan B if your dream of going to the NFL doesn't materialize the way that you're envisioning it? So to watch the medical response on the field, to understand that injuries are just as much a part of the game as throwing the ball and catching the ball and running with the ball and scoring touchdowns. Mm-hmm. Injuries come with the game just as much. And the treatment of those injuries, those are the things that you don't see on TV. Those are the things that you don't, you know, they don't show up, you know, in a stat report or anything like that. But they're just as critical to the game and having those athletes on the field. And so, you know, there's a pathway there where you could do that, be a part of what goes on behind the scenes that is a direct effect on the product that you see on TV. Mm-hmm. And you could do it for much longer than you could if you know, the average NFL career is only 3 years. And so, you know, versus, you know, people
wait
are...
Wait a minute. I'm sorry. Stop. Did you say 3 years?
3 years.
Doesn't it take like 4 years for them to get vested?
I believe it's either 3 or 4 years.
Okay.
I just had a conversation with Mike Logan, former Pittsburgh Steeler, about this. And we were talking about DeMar. And I believe he said it was either 3 years or 4 years.
Okay. Wow.
It takes to become vested in the NFL, which is a whole nother, it could be a whole nother conversation because, you know, DeMar Hamlin only being a second year player is not even vested in the NFL right now. So if he were to never be able to play the game again, he wouldn't even qualify for a pension as it stood right now. That's a whole nother conversation.
Indeed it is. I'm going to get you to hold that thought. We got to take a break. The news is coming up next. You're listening to Minority Health Matters. I'm glad you're with me. Dr. Simmons mentioned, you know, how much time they spent on Mr. Hamlin. I want to talk about CPR and whether or not you know how to do it coming up. We are back on Minority Health Matters. I am Lynn Hayes Freeland. This is a show we do once a month in cooperation with the Gateway Medical Society, their Journey to Medicine program. This is one of those shows that I always feel like when we start off, we might have a couple of things we can talk about. Then we get into the show and a million things come up. My guest today, Dr. William Simmons, Derek Turner. We've been talking about a variety of things most recently. We talked about the injury to and recovery of Damar Hamlin and how that process has been going, the role that medical professionals played in that. And gentlemen, I want to talk a little bit about CPR. And at some point this became very personal to me. Yesterday, I saw a car accident unfold right in front of my eyes. As I swerved to avoid the car involved in the accident, I saw a driver slumped over the wheel. I pulled into a neighboring parking lot, and I sat there for a minute and said, well, I do know CPR. I have been taught CPR, but could I actually do it? I've never done it. How common is that?
That's a great question, Lynn. There's always a fine line between what you learn in the classroom and when it actually comes to application. Because just as you were telling that story, I thought the same thing. I've been taught CPR several times. And in my field work, you know, it's critical for us to know CPR and know how to use a defibrillator and but to actually be in a position where you have to use it and you have to be able to respond, I guess you really don't know until you are actually doing it.
Right.
Even with the situation on the football field with Damar, how many paramedics have been trained, you know, to respond to that particular situation, but nobody was expecting to have to actually do it.
Right.
So kudos to the people who responded, who were able to save that young man. But that's the fine line that we walk on is between theory and application.
Yeah. And for the record, the decision was to call 911. For me, the decision was that it had been a minute since I was taught CPR and I didn't know if I was the person to do it. And because I had other options, there were other people who had pulled over as well. I just want to clarify that. Now, Dr. Simmons, let me ask you this, because you talked about how long they worked on Mr. Hamlin the other night on Monday. And let's be clear. I mean, one of the things I learned in taking a CPR class, it's hard. It is hard work.
It is absolutely hard work. And it's also hard work to do it right. Even in the medical environment, in the hospitals, we are constantly having to correct residents and nurses and people who are working on an actual patient in the operating environment, in the ICU, and show them that what you're doing is not exactly effective. Let's do it this way or let's do it that way. So there is, even people who have been trained don't always get it, don't always do it effectively. And that's one of the things that that was very important about that game, is that those trainers were right spot on. They knew what they were doing. They did it well, and they were prepared. They had an ambulance parked right outside the field, or right basically on the field, and so they had everything that they needed. So the goal is not just to have learned CPR, but actually have done it enough that you're doing it effectively. And that is going to be one thing. One of the things that you mentioned earlier, and I wanted to add before, because there's a lot of parents that have kids that are in sports and they're worried about their particular child. Mm-hmm. It's many of these symptoms, there are symptoms that develop before that cardiac arrest occurs on the field or before that person has a drops on the basketball court or so. They can sometimes be complaining to their parents about chest pain, or they can have some shortness of breath, or they can have performance decline. They said he used to be able to run the whole field back and forth, but now he has to stop and walk half the way. Palpitations, fainting spells, and those kinds of things. That tends to occur in advance to the big absolute cardiac event that might happen. So if you start seeing those kinds of things, you need to take them back to the doctor, and this time ask for an EKG and ask for a full evaluation, or send them to a cardiologist so that they can truly get the kind of evaluation that they need and not just a rubber stamp on that sports sheet.
So then let me ask one other question before we move on, because, again, I tell you, there's so many things that I want to talk to you guys about. On this subject of CPR, I'm guessing, and you tell me if I'm right or wrong here, and I'd like both of you, I guess, to weigh in on this. We should all be trained, yes, and we should all be trained or refresh that training on a regular basis?
Absolutely. CPR, the cards that you get when you get there will give you a couple of years of certification. But that is something that has to be refreshed on an ongoing basis so that you know exactly how to respond in that circumstances, how to ventilate the patient appropriately. Because even when you're doing the CPR correctly, you're still only getting about a third, 30% of what is effective cardiac output that you would normally get with a normal heartbeat. So if you're not doing it well, you're getting even less than that. So it's very, very important that you learn it and learn a truly life-saving technique that might prolong this person until other people get there that might be able to help and transport this patient, this person to a emergency environment.
One last question on CPR. Derek, you mentioned you've been trained in this. I mentioned that I've done it a couple times. Now, I did it. My training came late, so when I got trained, it was only hands-only CPR. But I think that a lot of people don't understand that there is CPR that you can learn that is hands-only, that doesn't involve putting your mouth on someone else's mouth.
Yes, that's true. In the Journey to Medicine program, we actually do have a course that's taken at the Star Center at West Penn Hospital. And not only are our staff trained in CPR, but we also teach the children CPR techniques as well. Those techniques that do not include giving a person mouth-to-mouth resuscitation.
Interesting. Okay, so, I mean, everybody, I know all y'all putting things on your resolution list and your to-do list for 2023. Well, add this to your list, but add it before going to the gym, because we know that half of the folks out here are going to fall off on that going to the gym thing. We're going to get ready to take a commercial break. You're listening to Minority Health Matters. I am Lynn Hayes Freeland, and, you know, we've talked a lot in the last couple months on this very show about violence. And one of the things that struck me overnight was a six-year-old took a gun to school and shot their teacher. I don't want to focus on that six-year-old because clearly there are some other issues there that we don't know anything about. But there has to be some long-term effect on our children who are being subjected to this violence every day. What happens to a six-year-old who sees a classmate pull out a gun and shoot their teacher? We're going to talk about violence and how it's affecting our society and our kids in particular coming up next. You're listening to Minority Health Matters. Well, I think pretty much it doesn't matter where you are, what city, what state you are in the United States of America. If you wake up in the morning, you turn on the news, whether it's TV or radio, you're going to hear about some violence that happened in that city the night before. It could be a shooting. It could be a multiple shooting. And more, it's becoming a mass shooting. It often involves young people. And then every now and then, there's a story that jumps out at me that says, whoa, wait a minute. That's where I am today. A six-year-old took a gun to school and shot their teacher. Now, I know how that affects me as a, not going to mention my age, something, a seasoned woman in society. But how does that affect our young people? And what are we doing to protect, preserve, and in many cases, repair the mental wellness of our young people? Dr. Simmons, I'm going to let you take a stab at that first.
Well, unfortunately, many of the games that that we buy our kids at Christmas, which is kind of just happened, many of them are saturated with violence. They whether they have the video games that have shootings and making the act of shooting someone or shooting something, they're becoming conditioned to it. So it doesn't really have the effect that it might have had on you when you heard about this. These kids are truly conditioned to people being shot and conditioned to this whole sort of thing. Unfortunately, in the inner city, they can see that happening on the streets from time to time. They actually they see their friends, or they see other people that may be injured or may gotten into a really bad fight or been shot, and they have to grow up with that kind of burden on them to the point where they have to come to some grips with it, and it all of a sudden doesn't become as much of an issue. And that is very sad when something as dramatic as that, people don't seem to be worried about it anymore. We have to do much more to try to incorporate a more positive attitude and a more positive and care about the use of guns and violence in our communities, because it's becoming saturated with guns and saturated with young people not thinking that's a big deal at all.
And Derek, let me bring you into the conversation as well. And full transparency, I came along after video games, so I kind of know them because I played them with my son when he was younger. But we played, you know, Madden and basketball. We didn't play these shoot 'em up games. How do we even begin to? I mean, in my house, my son wasn't allowed to play those games. Now, I'm sure he played them when he went to other people's houses, but not ours. But what are some of the things we can do? Because at the end of the day, these are the same kids that are coming into the Journey to Medicine program. They start at sixth grade, and sometimes by sixth grade, they've already lost someone to violence.
Well, then, in your question, you kind of hinted at the answer. And for me, as an educator, and somebody who has spent his entire career working in education or social work or in youth ministry, it starts with parenting. And unfortunately, for many of our young people, they're being exposed to that level of violence at a very early age. And you know, be it in the form of video games or on TV. I don't know what it is that we believe what we see on TV more now than we ever have before. But if it's TV, the movies, mainstream media, social media, our parents, I just don't believe, are doing enough to draw the line between what's fantasy, what's reality. And when it comes to allowing our children to either be exposed to violence or to consume violence on some artificial level, you know, it really starts with parenting. And, you know, I was joking with a friend the other day, and I was like, you know, when we talk, you know, about our children being young and, you know, let's say a five, you know, or better yet, like a 3 or 4 year old, you know, might tell somebody to shut up, and we think that that's cute when they're 3 or 4, but then we don't understand when that child becomes 7, 8, or 9 years old and the teacher calls home and says, you know, your child told me to shut up. And all of a sudden we say, I don't know where they got that from. Well, you thought it was cute when he was 2. So
yeah.
In my opinion, lies in parenting. It starts at home.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And for the record,
we have a situation where we, thank you very much, where we used to say a phrase, kids raising kids, because many times when I was growing up, when you had a particularly young mother
There's always been a grandmother or some other family member that was there to render support. Unfortunately, those grandparents and other more senior people in the families are not always present anymore. And so they lose that insight that can be brought by an older, more seasoned person in the family. And so indeed, we do have a situation where people who are inexperienced or kids are raising kids and not bringing to the table the kinds of things that might be the that might help these young people to grow up with a more understanding of violence and understanding of the problems that are occurring in our community and not to emulate it.
Indeed, and to your point and to Derek's as well, for me, now that I am a full-time grandmother, you know, shut up is not an option for my kids in my house. So moving on, because we just have a couple minutes left. Dr. Simmons, you started off, we were talking about the state of black health in 2023. You talked about the impact of the pandemic, COVID-19. Now there's a new variant that folks are beginning to talk about. What does that mean in terms of our community that hasn't made up for the ground lost 2 years ago?
You know, unfortunately, what the vaccines that are coming out are targeted at one variant or another. And when you it may indeed be helpful to have the various different boosters that have come along. But when you talk about having a new variant, oftentimes they have new markers on them and new protein spikes. And so they may not be as susceptible to the medications and the vaccines that you have gotten in the past. So what's going to happen is you probably hear in 5 or 6 months that there's a new vaccine that's more targeted to this new variant that's coming out. And that kind of chasing the virus kind of thing is going to continue on and on and on, because these viruses will continue to multiply and also to change their presentation, and then we're having problems. So that's where we are. We're kind of caught in a very bad situation where the virus is one step ahead of us in every situation.
In every situation. And Derek, I'm going to let you have the last word on this, because for folks who automatically get their flu shot every year, there's not a lot of moaning and bemoaning, oh, I got to get another flu shot. But there's something about this this vaccine that makes people feel like, why do I have to get another shot? Is that just in our heads, do you think?
I think part of it is mental. The other part of it might lie in, because COVID happened the way it did and the vaccine came out within the amount of time that it came out, where you're hearing it usually takes anywhere from 7 to 10 years to develop such a thing. Yet, you know, we were able to put a COVID mm-hmm. vaccine out, you know, within 2 or 3 years.
Right.
You know, it's like, is that really safe? And so I think there's a part of that where, you know, people are saying, you know, I'd like to really, you know what's happening. Is this really a safe thing for me to put in my body? Has it really been researched and developed the way that maybe your general flu shot has, or your chickenpox virus or something, you know, vaccine or something of that?
Something along those lines. Yeah. And you know what they say about the chicken McNuggets, but I'm just going to leave that right there. We're out of time, gentlemen. As I said, we could do this for a couple of hours, but in fact, we have 1 hour on the first Saturday of every month. Derek Turner, Dr. William Simmons, thank you so much for joining us today. Lots of good information. If you joined us late, you can catch all of this online. Go to odyssey.com. I'll also post it on my Lynn Hayes Freeland News Radio 1020 Facebook page. I appreciate you, and let's make 2023 a great year.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your
vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.